The Lakers and Sixers advance as your not-so-conventional seven seeds, but with two key injuries to Zion Williamson and Jimmy Butler, will the home teams get out alive tomorrow night and be a part of the NBA playoffs starting Saturday? The NHL will jump into the postseason party this weekend as well, but why are there still games and seedings to be determined out west when the East is already set? I'll check on the latest in Major League Baseball as I'm playoff ready and then some to deliver hard-hitting, unapologetic sports talk. It's all coming up, but first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right, no 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste. How could I forget the taste? Crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reels here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular, just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reels podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reels as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels Podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, direct, and in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, Michael people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. It's the most wonderful time of the year. All right, let me not get crazy. It is not Christmas. Far from it, in fact. I'm pumped as the playoffs in both the NBA and NHL are just about ready to set it off. Plus, anything else that's happening in the sports universe, I got you covered as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first-timers, welcome aboard. And for those who have been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Monday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And it's great to be back on a Thursday because, as you know, the last few Thursdays have been topsy-turvy and crazy for me. But with all that being said, this coming weekend is one of the best weekends for me personally. Maybe not for a lot of sports fans. Maybe just for a precious few like yours truly. But one thing is for certain. The road to the Stanley Cup and the Lawrence O'Brien Trophy in the NBA begins Saturday. I love these weekends, especially the next two, because you have wall-to-wall basketball and hockey to kind of carry you through the month of April and into May. And then obviously, once we get past that, where the NFL drafts a week from today, and then you have the first of the Triple Crown with the Kentucky Derby, the first Saturday in May, and then you have all the playoffs, baseball, so much to shake a stick at that it has me giddy. And with this coming weekend, with everything that is about to embark, to see where the association, as well as the NHL, how those postseasons will go, you know I'm going to have you covered from pillar to post on everything that's happening with both of those sports. And I'm going to start off with the NBA because we already have the seven seeds locked and in the postseason officially. Because even though the play-in tournament, as we know, is to qualify for the playoffs and they're, in essence, one game elimination, except if you're the 7 and 8 seeds. And I'm going to start there with both the Lakers and Sixers because obviously they're in and it's official before I even preview tomorrow night's games. And of course, I'm going to preview the postseason overall. NHL a little bit different, which I'll get to later on. But for the Lakers and Sixers, getting in, squeaking by, so to speak, more so the Sixers than Lakers. And these are two 7 seeds that are so unconventional that you could even argue whether or not that these teams have long postseason runs in them. Now, it's going to be a little bit more trickier for the Lakers because they're going to have to go up against the defending champ in the Denver Nuggets. And people may think that there could be an upset brewing based on the fact that the opening round of the NBA isn't every other day. It seems like it takes almost a month before the first round is up, and that's for TV and with all the games and having to pacify the networks, whether it's ESPN, TNT, ABC, even NBA TV, which I'm sure you'll see a game or two sprinkled throughout the course of these first 2 weeks. But for the Lakers, and I'll start with them, since they won the game against New Orleans, which the Pelicans had a very good shot to win, unfortunately, with Zion Williamson hurting his hamstring, and he's not going to play in the game tomorrow night against Sacramento, and that's going to be a huge loss, and that's going to be a big game, which I'll talk about a little bit later on, between the Kings and the Pelicans. But for the Lakers to be able to get out of that game alive, Anthony Davis with a very good game, LeBron as well, D'Angelo Russell hitting big threes, making 5 from behind the three-point line, and they were able to have a few days off. They didn't have to worry about having to play a game in their building for a chance to get into the postseason as an 8 seed. So right now, they're just taking it easy. And they do have a date with the Nuggets, which is going to be tricky to say the least. And I'll preview all the series and I'll get to that in a minute. But do the Lakers, even with Denver in their sights, and knowing that the schedule isn't going to be every other day like it was last year for the conference final where both of those teams met one another, and we know how that unfolded, where the Nuggets just swept the Lakers, although all the games are competitive, but they swept them to go on to an NBA final and then win the whole thing, as we know. But for the Lakers, do they have it in them? I think they do. The opponent is going to be tough because the Nuggets, I'm sure they're going to be well rested. And if the Lakers are going to have any shot to win the series, as we like to see with these underdogs, and even with the Lakers, I get it as a 7 seed, generally with their talent and the way they're built, they should be at least in the top 4. But for the Lakers, to me, whenever you're a big underdog, you always want to get the odd number game. And yes, I get it that even if they lose game 1 and they win game 2, then they go back to LA with the home court advantage. But still, I don't like to look at it from that perspective because if you win game 1, then you have house money going into game 2. And then even if you do happen to split, you still have to win game 3. And to me, they have a better shot of winning game 1 because of Denver, maybe a little bit of rust, LA having a game under their belt in New Orleans, even with a 3 or 4 day rest. And then for them to pull off an upset there, and they could not take the pedal off the metal in game 2, but again, odd number games. They could go back home, win a game 3, and then put all the pressure on Denver to win a game 4. To me, that's the only way they're going to win the series. Because Denver, they're going to be primed. They're a team that, not going to say destiny, but I would think that they're going to want to take their championship and do the best that they can to protect it, to defend it, and see if they can get back to an NBA final, to become back-to-back, which we haven't seen in quite some time. I guess you got to go back to the Miami Heat of the 20 teens when they won back-to-back there when they beat Oklahoma City and San Antonio. And I take that back. It's actually Golden State. There goes my memory there for a second, people. When they won in 2017-18, the two Kevin Durant teams, of course, they won back-to-back, and that's the last time we've seen teams do that. So for the Lakers, and I'll get into more of the series in a minute, but I think they have a better shot to beat the Nuggets this time around in the opening round than they did last year because, again, they had the play-in game, then they had to beat Memphis, they had to beat Golden State, and then they had to play every other day against Denver. And as we saw, they weren't able to win a game against the Nuggets in the conference final. As far as the Sixers go, last night with Joel Embiid. And remember, they came into the playoffs with, what, an 8-game winning streak? And they were down by 13 yesterday. And even with Jimmy Butler getting hurt at the end of the first quarter, where he's going to get an MRI, it's quite possible he may have some MCL damage. Who knows if it's torn, whatever. But you saw him limping off there at the end of the game or going into the locker room when the game concluded. And the Heat, who did have that lead, but they weren't able to hang on. And even though it was close and bitter to the end, the Sixers were able to hit some clutch free throws. And they were able to prevail with a one-point victory last night. And they're another team, just like the Lakers, unconventional from the standpoint of the reigning MVP and Joel Embiid. Tyrese Maxey is a very good complimentary second player. And you have to think whether or not that if they were healthy throughout the year with Embiid being on the shelf for 2.5 months with that torn meniscus that he had suffered in Golden State in late January, that's a team that should be easily a 2-3, no worse as a 4 seed in the Eastern Conference. But they're 7th, and they're going to go up against the Knicks, which I think is one of the more fascinating series in this first round. I'll get to that in a second. But this is a team, this is an organization, and I get it that you've had coaches removed and GMs removed and trust the process and the whole nine. But for the Sixers, when you have a team that has a ton of expectations and with everything that's happened over the last decade with this organization, and the best victories when it comes to any sport are the ones that you least expect. And with the Sixers not necessarily hobbling into this postseason, but for them to get to a point where they are the underdog, and with a Knicks team that did make it to the playoffs last year, won a round and lost in 5 to the Heat. But to me, there are more expectations on the Knicks being a 2 seed and with the city pumped up to see if they have a deep run in them. To me, this is a matchup that I'm not going to say it's the worst one, but I wouldn't be puffing my chest out if I'm a Knicks fan thinking that, oh, we're going to take care of the Sixers here in the opening round of the playoffs. And for this team to not make it to a conference final under Joel Embiid, and I get it, a lot of the players that they drafted, Ben Simmons, Jahlil Okafor, going down the line, they're no longer here. But because Embiid is a big part of that process, and with this team underachieving, and I get it with Embiid on the shelf for most of the year, I could see them surprising some people. Now, in order for them to really reach heights as far as this Sixer team, they would have to get to a conference final. Can they do that? It's quite possible they could, because in the 2-7 bracket that they're in, and then they would go up against either Indiana or Milwaukee in the next round. And Milwaukee, we understand that they're a team that has been rumbling, bumbling, and stumbling throughout the course of the latter part of the year. And you could say the whole year overall, although they got off to a great start and then they fired Adrian Griffin. We've been down that road before. But when we look at the Sixers, they have a shot to get to a conference final. Now, of course, it's not going to be easy. They're going to have to get past an upstart Knicks team that on the last day of the season was able to get the 2 seed and can actually host as the first 2 rounds having the home court, which hasn't happened going back to the 90s. When you're looking at a Knicks team over the last 35 years. So for the Knicks, I'm sure they're going to be pumped up, ready to go. That's a series that I'm really, really looking forward to. But for the Sixers, I think they can get to a conference final. Will they get to one? I don't think they will. But because the chips are stacked against them, they are going to be underdogs in each of the rounds. Slight underdog, I would think, against the Knicks. Who knows what's going to happen in the next round. But this would be a year that with everything that's happened with this team, I could see them getting to a conference final, and who knows, that could be against the Celtics or any other team, because you would think at this stage of the game, it probably will be Boston, but stranger things have happened, and the Celtics I can't really trust, and I'm going to get to them in a minute when it comes to the storylines overall. But now that we pivot with those 2-7 seeds to get to the games, and I guess we could talk about Golden State, Sacramento, the other teams that have advanced and will play tomorrow night for a chance to get into the postseason. I mean, what can you say about Golden State? They put up a clunker there, especially in the second half. Klay Thompson had no points. It was all on Steph Curry, but the team was just very inconsistent. I understand they played a lot better in the second half of the year, and I thought that you couldn't go against betting Steph Curry, not betting against him at this point, knowing that in a 1-game playoff, really 2 for them, because they would have to beat Sacramento and then obviously play New Orleans, but we know that's not going to be the case. but they would have to win two games in order to get into the postseason. But it was just too much for Golden State to handle, to have Sacramento, even without Malik Monk, and putting up a big performance there by Keegan Murray, who had 32 points. What did he make? 6 threes in the game. And they just blew him out, 118-94. And the Warriors go off into the spring and summer quite meekly. And a lot of question marks abound with that team, whether or not Chris Paul, I believe he does have another year on his contract, but obviously he's not getting any younger. The team is getting older by the second. Klay Thompson, who's going to be a free agent, I understand he's probably going to come back on a lesser deal, but is another team out there going to try to bring him in and see if they could strike lightning in a bottle to be that final piece to win a championship? Who knows? I would think he's going to stay at Golden State, but it's not about them. It's about Sacramento, and that was a big win for them, but still not big enough, because for a team that was a 3 seed last year and they did lose in the opening round to Golden State, you would think that that team would have progressed, maybe not to be a 2 or a 1 seed, but would have been in the bulk of the tournament and not have to deal with a play-in scenario as they're going to have to do tomorrow night against New Orleans. And now we could segue to those two games, because for the East, Chicago, Miami, and the two big question marks when it comes to health. The first one being Jimmy Butler, as I talked about before with the MCL. If he's not going to play, that's going to be a huge void for the Heat to overcome to try to get into the postseason. They're going to have to rely on other guys to provide not only just offense, but also just some heart, blood, guts, etc., to just will them, just like they had to do last year in this same scenario. And I've talked about this several times, and I'll have to talk about it one, maybe even two more times come Monday if they do happen to advance, Miami that is, where the Heat played the Bulls in a do-or-die elimination game, and the Bulls had a 3-point lead, and Kobe White actually had a very good game in that elimination game last April. So for him to see if he could do a carbon copy of what he did last night against the Atlanta Hawks, and for the Bulls, without having Jimmy Butler in the lineup, they're going to have a very good shot to see if they could squeak into the playoffs as an 8 seed. And that's going to be a game-time decision. Unless the MRI comes back pretty bad and it looks like Butler may not play, that I can't tell you right at this very moment. If Butler doesn't play, I'll say that the Heat aren't going to survive. And we could talk about Heat culture. We could talk about their whole makeup and how they're built, etc. But that's not a good home crowd. That's not a daunting place to play. And even though they did win last year, as they talked about with Kobe White having that game where they had a 3-point lead late with about 3 minutes to go, and then the Heat went on, I believe, a 12-1 run to win the game, and they were able to advance and went all the way to the NBA Finals. But I don't know if the Heat are going to be able to survive that again. Just because they did it last year doesn't mean it's an automatic that they're going to punch their ticket to Boston to play game one on Sunday. If Butler does play and gives them a quote-unquote Willis Reed moment, then I'll have to give them a bit of an edge. But that doesn't automatically mean that even if he plays 6 minutes in a game and gives you a couple of jumpers to start, that they're going to cruise to a victory. Because as we all know, the Heat, they like to get into a street fight. And they're not going to blow people out. They're not going to cruise to victories. Maybe they'll pull away late. But I could see the Bulls winning this game, especially if Butler isn't going to be in the lineup. And as for the nightcap with Sacramento and New Orleans, Zion Williamson, who had a 40-point game the other night, and then the hamstring cropped up to the point where he's not going to play. And that's going to be a huge loss for the Pelicans. And same scenario with the Heat. If Zion's not going to play in that game, I could see Sacramento winning that game and going on to the postseason. And that's going to be a tough break, because New Orleans, they're a team that's going to have to rely on Zion at some point, even if they do win this game. Who knows if he's going to be eligible? I won't say eligible, but who knows if he's going to be healthy enough to play if they do advance after tomorrow night. But that will worry about if they do win. But for this franchise, who is banking everything on Zion, especially after having to trade Anthony Davis and falling to get the number one pick in their lap, where Zion comes out and we know about the chronicles of him, overweight, not being healthy, foot injuries, knee injuries, etc., and him playing, what, 71 games this year, to the point where he had 40 points in a game where they could have eliminated the Lakers and moved on to the postseason, and now it was like a giant flat tire in the middle of the desert, where you don't even know if the Pelicans are going to come out alive here. And if Zion's not going to play, I'm going to think Sacramento's going to win the game. How could you not? So if Zion was healthy, I would have definitely chosen the Pelicans to win that game and make it in as an 8 seed. But I can't say that. And the uncertainty of Butler, to me, bodes the same for Chicago. But we don't know whether or not Butler's going to be in the lineup. So that we'll have to wait and see as we inch closer to the double dip tomorrow night. Now, as far as the storylines for the postseason, and there are plenty. And the first one, they're the Boston Celtics. Because this is a team, think about this. They've been to the conference finals 5 of the last 7 years. And even if you want to take out that first year, which was Jaylen Brown's rookie year, and let's just talk about this decade. Since 2020, they've been to 3 of the past 4 conference finals. And they've been all against the Miami Heat. 2020 in the bubble. 2022, where Jimmy Butler missed that 3 at the end, which would have eliminated Boston there in the Game 7. And then last year, when the Celtics were down 0-3, they came all the way back before Jason Tatum, in their building in a Game 7, turned his ankle, and it went south from there. And then they also had the finals appearance 2 years ago where they lost to the Golden State Warriors after having a 2-1 series lead and a 94-90 lead with about 5 minutes to go in Game 4, and it went all up in smoke. So this organization and this current team, especially with their superstar leader, Jason Tatum, and their second banana in a 1, Jaylen Brown. You also want to throw in Kristaps Porzingis. His health is going to be critical to see how far the Celtics go. And Jrue Holiday, who signed that big contract there, which I was a little bit surprised. Not to say he doesn't deserve that kind of money, but the Celtics, they're going to be tapped out with the second apron, etc. But that's for another day. But with all the scars that this team has had over the last few years and not getting a championship under their belt with all their conference finals appearances and even the 1 NBA final appearance, this is it. Now, if they go up against Denver and they lose in 10 overtimes in a Game 7, which would be in their building, I might add, and they haven't been a real good home team in the postseason. Just look back last year. And the other thing you have to worry about this team, well, before I even get to that, even if they lose in 10 overtimes to Denver, it's still going to be a bitter defeat. The Celtics have to seal the deal this year, even if it is against Denver, because they were built to win this year. They have all the pieces in place and everybody's healthy. Now, anything could happen, a la Jason Tatum Game 7 against Miami. Heaven forbid something like that goes down. But for this team, like I mentioned, haven't played well at home in the postseason, lost big time games. Yes, they've won big time games too. Game 6 in Milwaukee 2 years ago, Game 6 in Philadelphia last year. And yes, they do have a penchant for winning big games. But the one thing I fear about the Celtic team, they don't have a penchant for winning close games. They usually blow teams out or they win comfortably. But when they're in a rock fight a la Miami last year, or even in situations where they may fall asleep at the wheel, game five against Milwaukee 2 years ago, after the mishap there, the missed free throw where Milwaukee was able to put it back, or even losing Game 5 at home to Philadelphia last year, which was inexplicable before having to win Game 6 and Game 7 in the conference semis. This team has their lapses. And the coach is going to be on the griddle this year. He's going to have to get to a final minimum. And it's all right in front of them. I mean, think about it. The East is not that strong. Yes, I know the Knicks fan, they could say, wait, we just beat you last week, and I'm sure we're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink to do whatever it is. And they're not afraid of the Celtics. I don't think they are. And the Bucks, they beat the Celtics about 10 days ago, and that's when Giannis hurt himself, and that's going to be a big question mark, which I'll get to in a bit. And although they're going to be the heavy favorite to come out of the East, but close games, comfortability, you got to wonder about them, and being able to put the proverbial foot on their necks of their opponents to not only win these games, but to put them out of their misery. To me, that is a fascinating storyline coming into this playoff. Because if they won a championship in the last few years, it wouldn't be a big deal. But because they haven't, and because they've lost bad games and big games in their building, and let's face it, I don't trust this team wholeheartedly. I just don't, as a Celtic fan, and a longtime one at that. So that's the first storyline going into this postseason, if you ask me. The other storyline are the upstarts. And what I mean by that, more so out west, And I'd have to say OKC, even Minnesota, but they have a tough matchup with Phoenix. But are the Thunder for real to the point where they could get to a conference final and maybe even an NBA final? And I get it that OKC doesn't have that broad appeal to the sports fan because they are a very young team and a team that from this point to the end of the decade and maybe even beyond, because remember, they have a bunch of draft picks. They have draft capital going through the nose, and with their core young players of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Josh Giddey, Jalen Johnson, they have a team that is built for the next half dozen years. And this is their first step to see whether or not they belong with the Denvers, with the Phoenix Suns, even though that they're a six seed, but they have the veteran leadership. We know who the cast of characters are there. You even want to throw in the Clippers for that matter, or if they go up against the Lakers. And even in this first round, who knows? Maybe they're going to face Sacramento or New Orleans. That we'll have to wait and see. But to me, it's going to be intriguing to see whether or not this young team is going to have enough of a pedigree to get to a conference final. And even if they lose a game seven, I know that'll be heartbreaking for the OKC fan or even for the NBA fan that wants the Thunder to get to a final. But this is their first step. How they're going to perform in this first step, to me, is going to be fascinating. Will they go on a deep postseason run, or will they go out meekly, let's say in the second round? I would think they're going to win this first round, but they're going to go up against a team that is just as young. I would think you'd want to see Sacramento right now, only because if you're not going to have Zion Williamson, it's going to take a lot of the luster out of that series. But I would think that OKC is going to be primed to get to at least the conference final and maybe beyond. Now, Denver's going to stand in their way, and I'm sure there's going to be a couple other teams along the way, but that is another storyline that I'm going to look at, and to a lesser degree, the T-Wolves, because they've had a big year. Anthony Edwards is obviously a superstar in the making, and with Karl Anthony Towns back, is this going to be a team that's also going to have legs based on a big regular season that they had? And they're going up against the Suns, which is going to be very tricky. And the Suns, we all understand that they're up and down. And when you think they're going to play terribly, they play well. And when you think, all right, now they're going to be on a roll, they regress. But I want to see how Minnesota does here. Because to me, they got to get out of this first round. They have to show and prove and back that regular season record with at least a showing in this first round to the point where whomever they match up in the second round, we could say, all right, now let's see where we could go from there. And if Minnesota does get to a conference final, and let's say it happens to be against the OK City Thunder, then great. But we all know that if the T-Wolves do win, they're going to play, in all likelihood, the Nuggets in the second round. So let's see them get through this first round against Phoenix. But to me, I want to see how much they're going to show and prove. More so OKC because they're a one seed and how far they could go. But the T-Wolves are a two-way when it comes to my storylines. I know I could talk about Lakers Sixers as the dark horses. I know I mentioned that from the beginning, so I won't go down that road, but we can unpack that. And that could be a situation when I go through these series, I'll go further in depth on that. But for the third storyline that I have to throw in the Milwaukee Bucks, because this was a team when they brought in Damian Lillard, not to say that he was the final piece, but certainly was going to be that uber complimentary piece to Giannis to go along with Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Bobby Portis, etc. And so far, it has not really worked out the way I'm sure the Buck fan would have liked it. They had a shot to be a two seed. Obviously, Giannis wasn't playing in those last few games, and his status, as we know right now, is uncertain. But for everything that has transpired this year, firing the coach, even with them being almost 20 games over 500. Doc Rivers coming in and not really doing the job. And now they're going to go up against an Indiana Pacers team that could be feisty, that maybe could push them to the limit, especially if Giannis is not going to be there for the first part of that series. And I understand if they don't make it out of this first round, they're going to attribute that to the injury to Giannis whenever he comes back. If he comes back game three, game four, who knows? But after last year's debacle as a one seed and losing to the Miami Heat the way they did, and I got it, they have a built-in excuse. And for them not to have Giannis there is enormous. But I'm going to look at them as a team, whether or not they go to the brink in the seventh game and lose in their building, with or without Giannis, will we think of them differently then? Or will it be a scenario where their team is in disarray, The Pacers are running the Bucks out of the gym. And for everything that happened this year, they were just a paper tiger. And yes, I could talk about some of these smaller teams. Does Dallas have a run in them with Kyrie and Luka? We could talk about the Pacers with Halliburton, a guy that obviously is also a rising star in this league. Can he put his name on the map? Now, of course, it is through the regular season, but as I like to say, Walt Clyde Frazier, the legendary Nick, he said it best. You make your name in the regular season and your fame in the postseason. Now, can Halliburton raise his game amongst the likes of the top 10, 15, 20 players in the league to be that guy? And even if they go out in the first round, but to put up big-time numbers in a big-time spot? To me, that remains to be seen. The Clippers, that's another team that is looking to get to an NBA final for the first time in their franchise's history with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, James Harden, etc. You have those storylines as well, but to me, those top three, they're hard to beat only because the Celtics have a lot of pressure on them. OKC, all right, you're a one seed. Granted that Denver lost that game to San Antonio at the end of the year, but let's see what you're going to do. And with a little bit of Minnesota there sprinkled in, and then also the Bucks. Now as I go through the series real quick, in the East, whomever plays the Celtics, now I don't think, even if Miami wins, and I understand that that is going to be a very competitive, and everybody's going to harken back to the three of the last 4 years where the Heat and Celtics have met up in a conference final, and now this is an opening round. But if Butler's going to be compromised here, I can't see this being any more than a six-game series. And if it's the Bulls, I'll give the Bulls one game. I can see the Celtics winning in five. And I get it that if the Heat do win, a lot of the prognosticators, they may say, oh, this could be the Celtics' toughest task. The Heat aren't afraid of the Celtics, and that's all true. But I would think if Butler's going to be far from 100%, and especially if he's going to be not going to play tomorrow night and they somehow win and they're going to have to put him together with scotch tape and bubblegum, then I see the Celtics winning at least in six games. Anything more than that, I'll be shocked. As far as the Sixers and Knicks, I really think that that's a compelling series. And yes, we could talk about Jalen Brunson. We could talk about what they've done to get that two seed. And the Knicks fan, they are going to be ready to go there come Saturday, 6 p.m. at the Garden, which is a weird start time. But I think the Sixers, because they're going to be a team that's an underdog, and I'm sure they're going to hear it all over the course of the next couple of days, and especially with the media here in the Northeast, how they're going to say, not that the Sixers don't have a shot, but the Knicks, a lot of people are probably going to pick them to win in six. I'm going to say it goes seven games, and I'm not going to tweak the Knicks fan by any stretch, but I'm going to say the Knicks win a hard-fought game series in seven games. Because with Embiid and having guys to guard him, and who knows what Mitchell Robinson, if he's going to be a guy that's always in foul trouble, what he's going to do against Embiid, and how that series is going to play out, even with Kyle Lowry, a guy who I get he's aging, but he's won a championship. He knows what it takes to win. He was on that Heat team last year that went to an NBA final. So they have more experience and more of a game breaker on their side. And yes, I understand Jalen Brunson, but still, I think it's going to be a seven-game series, and I think the Knicks will prevail in seven. As far as the Pacers and Bucks, I think this is also another seven-game series. And that's the one thing, too, about these first-round series. A lot of these series, I think, are going to be, I'm not going to say riveting, but I think that they're going to be very competitive. And I could see, especially without Giannis, this could also be a seven-game series. I think it's going to go at least six. And let's see if Indiana is going to be able to rise to that occasion with Pascal Siakam, Miles Turner, etc. But I would think that the Pacers, they'll hang in there. And if Giannis is going to be healthy, and let's say he's going to play from game one on, I would think it's going to be at least a six-game series. If there's no Giannis, seven games. Well, dare I say Pacers? No, I'm going to say the Bucks in seven also. And that has a lot to do with Giannis' health. But I could see that going all the way to the wire just based on the uncertainty of Giannis starting off this series in a game one. And then you have Orlando and Cleveland, which obviously is a series that is not on a lot of people's radars. Cleveland, to me, they have to win this series. Orlando's a young team on the come up. And for the Magic, who has very good young players, and Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero to lead their attack, Jonathan Isaac, etc. But for the Cavaliers, a team that lost in the first round to the Knicks last year, they have Donovan Mitchell, they have the best player that's on the court. You could argue that, especially if you're a Magic fan, but I would think this could also be a 6 or 7 game series. But I would think it's probably going to go 6, the inexperience of Orlando. But even with the likelihood of Cleveland being hot and cold up and down, I would think that the Cavs will prevail, so I'm going to pick them to win in 6 games. Out west, if OKC plays Sacramento, I'm going to say they're going to win in 6, and if it's New Orleans without Zion, they're going to win in 5. I think Sacramento could push them even further, but you can't really trust Sacramento 100%. I only based that on last year against Golden State, and I get it, that's last year, but if they do win, come on, they have to win 2 playoff games and then play the number one seed, OKC. I can see OKC winning those first 2 games, and maybe Sacramento win the next 2, and then OKC will win the next 2 and then move on to the next series. So, and then with Zion going to be out, and who knows for how long, I think that could be a 5-game series, maybe 6, but OKC I think will prevail. Denver and the Lakers, for everything that I mentioned, again, the Lakers are going to have to win those odd number games, I think, in order for them to win the series. They're going to have to win 2 games in Denver, and that's going to be tricky to say the least. I'm going to give the Lakers 2 games, and that may be a lot, but because of the week off and maybe some rust, and with the Lakers as fresh as they could possibly be at this time of the year, unlike a conference final, I'm going to say that the Nuggets win in 6. Could be 5, but I'm going to give 6 only because I'll give the Lakers a little bit more dap. Maybe I shouldn't, but D'Angelo Russell, he's going to have to do about 2 or 3 carbon copies of what he did against the Pelicans in the playing game. He's going to be a huge factor to see how far they go in this series. He's going to need that perimeter shooting, Austin Reeves as well. And that's only for them to win 2 games. So imagine for them to win the series, they're going to have to be lights out. So I'm going to pick Nuggets in 6. Phoenix and Minnesota, it's weird because to me, which Phoenix Suns team is going to show up? Are they going to be the team that's going to try to run and gun and outscore the opponent in the 130s, 140s? Is Devin Booker going to take his game to the next level? And yes, we've seen him have those 30, 40-point performances in the playoffs, but then follow that up with a stinker. Kevin Durant, I get it, he's still brilliant, but what are you going to get out of Kevin Durant? Are you going to get the 30-point performance, but him shooting 26 shots? Or are you going to get the 32-point performance where he's 11 for 16? So that's the thing about Phoenix. And I get it that the T-Wolves, I can't trust 100% either, because they're a young team. We've seen them implode against Memphis a couple of years ago. They have not been a team that, although been consistent this year, I would think that they would win this series. It's probably going to go 6 games minimum, maybe even 7. And based on that, I'd be afraid because I could see the T-Wolves get tight in their building. But with Rudy Gobert and with Karl Anthony Towns, I may be giving the T-Wolves too much credit. Something tells me the Suns are going to win in 7. I don't want to see them win, even though I picked Phoenix at the beginning of the year to win or to get to an NBA final. But I'm going to say it's Minnesota in 7. Although I really do feel Phoenix. I don't know, something about Phoenix. Again, they're Jekyll and Hyde, I don't know. Then you have the Clippers and Mavericks. We've seen this movie plenty of times. How I look at it is, Luka, I remember, now that I think about it, I remember them playing a 7-game series. Was it 2 years ago where the road team won all the games until the home team won the final game? And wasn't that the Clippers? But anyway, Luka, Kyrie, that's a deadly combo. And I get it, you're going up against Kawhi, Paul George, James Harden. If there's somebody that should be itching and has a lot to prove, it's James Harden. But I'll leave that aside for now. That's going to be another 7-game series. To think, you may have all these series go at least 6. Maybe 5 with the Celtics, even Denver for that matter, maybe OKC. But you may have a lot of 6 and 7-game series, which is usually not the way the NBA has gone in the first round over the years. But I'm going to say Dallas is going to win in 7 games. Only because of Luka. More so Luka than Kyrie. And I know Dallas has made those contributions here with P.J. Washington at the trade deadline, bringing him in, and they also bring the other player off the top of my head. His name is eluding me from at this very moment. Gafford, I believe, is the kid's name. But I get it. Tyronn Lue and the veterans on that team. But something tells me Dallas is going to pull it out in seven. So you're going to have a lot of long series here in this first round, I think. Maybe as many as five that are going to get to at least six, maybe seven, which is going to be compelling, and I think the NBA needs it. They don't need to have these series in four or in five, and then you got to wait, it seems like, a month before those teams who have clinched their first round series early to play in the second round, because as we know, the schedule for the first round takes forever. So that's my NBA in a big giant nutshell as we get ready for it. And to look at the schedule here real quick, I know I'm 37 minutes in, I got to get to the NHL, which I will. The NBA, your schedule is as follows. Saturday and Sunday, wall to wall, where the first game, you're going to have Orlando at Cleveland at 1, followed by Phoenix, Minnesota at 3:30, Philadelphia, New York at 6, all on ESPN, and then a nightcap on ABC, LA at Denver, the Lakers that is, where Sunday, you're going to have the Celtics play either Chicago, Miami at 1, Dallas at LA at 3:30, Indiana at Milwaukee at 7, and then a nightcap, whomever plays Oklahoma City, that'd be Sacramento or New Orleans. Now as I get to the NHL, lace up my skates, before I even get into any of the playoffs, I have a big problem with the schedule. Because you have a ton of games out in the West tonight, which makes no sense because the NHL should have ended their season yesterday. Because then you would have had a couple days off, and I get it that the East, all their games are done, and the schedule for the playoffs, where the Islanders are going to open it up against Carolina, and then you have Toronto, Boston, and then on Sunday, you're going to have Tampa, Florida, where and the Capitals and Rangers, where you don't even have the West set up just yet because you have some seeding possibilities which need to be ironed out. But why? So I guess you're going to have those teams maybe start Sunday into Monday for the Western Conference. So I'm sure you're probably going to have four games Sunday, and then you're going to have the two games with the West on Monday, and then you have the East pick it up from there. But I don't like that schedule. Why do they do that is beyond me. Have everybody end on the same day and then have the playoffs start Saturday and Sunday. What? Because you don't want it to conflict with the NBA? Seriously? And I get it that ESPN and TNT, they're partners in both the NBA and NHL. So I guess they have to separate it as best as possible. But I just don't like that. To me, it doesn't make any sense where your schedule tonight, you have six games. And a lot of those games don't really matter. Yes, I get it for seeding when it comes to some of these games because the Kings, chances are they're going to play Dallas in the first round anyway, but I can't even get into the first round matchups because we don't know who they are where in the East. I could break those down. So I don't like the way the NHL worked out their schedule here. Hopefully they can fix that from moving next year and beyond, but yeah, I don't like that because I can't even give you a fair shake as to what the West is going to look like when it comes to these matchups and even predict that. So for that, I'm just going to have to talk about the East. One thing I want to talk about real quick. I know Auston Matthews didn't get to 70 goals, which hasn't happened since Mario Lemieux, dating back 30 plus years, or roughly 30 years. He fell short of that last night in Tampa, where he wasn't able to get that 70th goal. He would have been one of a handful of players in the history of the sport. Obviously, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Bernie Nichols, Brett Hull, etc. But for Phil Esposito, but for Matthews, he falls short of that. And obviously, they have a date in the postseason with the Bruins, which I'll get to in a little bit. But for the postseason, which we'll touch on in a second, my over-unders, I have to get this off my case because with Tampa playing the Maple Leafs last night, and that was the last shot for Auston Matthews to get that elusive 70th goal, Tampa needed to lose in order for me to get my over-unders at 4-2 for the year, if you can believe it. They were 96.5, and they went into yesterday's game at 96. So what happened? The Lightning beat the Leafs. They get 98 points. So therefore, I'm 3-3 with my over-under point totals for the year. And real quick, if you're curious, for the NHL, my over-unders were the following. I picked four overs, I might add. Detroit, 86.5. They had 91. That was a win. The Rangers, 100.5. They blew by that at 114. Ottawa, I know, real bad. 91.5, that was an over. They had 78. And the Blackhawks, I know what got into me. I thought Bedard, changing of the guard there, maybe they would have had a little bit of a better year. They did not. 51 points. And then my wins were Pittsburgh, good one there. They were 98.5. They had 88, and they lost to the Islanders yesterday. And then 96.5, they went in at 96, and we know what happened there. So now let's get to the storylines of this postseason. And it's weird because when I take a look at the view from 30,000 feet, although I can't really prognosticate the West, but my storylines are as follows. Number one is the Rangers. And people would say, well, why the Rangers, Jay Reels? Seriously, why? Just because they had 114 points and won the President's Trophy? Think about their recent track record. 2 years ago, they were a team that were primed to get to a Stanley Cup final. They had a 2-0 series lead against the Tampa Bay Lightning going back to Tampa. And they let the Lightning, granted coming off of back-to-back Stanley Cup wins, but they swept them from that point on and fell short of making it to the Cup final. And then last year, although up and down, but they lost to the Devils after beating the Devils 5-1 in the first two games of the series at New Jersey. And they lost that series in seven games. And now this year, where everything, all the stars are aligned. They have the great combination of veteran leadership led by Artemi Panarin. And guys like that, where they have Alexis Lafreniere, who's coming into his own. And they have the right mix of players. Adam Fox, their defenseman. Igor Shesterkin, who's had a very good second half of his year. And this is it. They are ready to make a cup run and win the whole thing. And we know about President's Trophy winners. Very rarely do they win a Stanley Cup. So to me, a lot of pressure's on them. In this opening series against the Capitals, I get it that the Caps are playing with house money. They're going to be fast and loose. Alexander Ovechkin, who's now 41 goals away from Wayne Gretzky. So just keep that in mind as we go to next year. But to me, it's all in the Rangers. It's not about the Bruins like last year, where that was the storyline going into the postseason. Even the Panthers, who are trying to get back to a cup final, we could talk about them. No, it's not about them. To me, it's about the Rangers. Because they're an original six team. I'm sure Gary Bettman and company would do backflips if the Rangers get to a cup final. And I'm sure they would say the same if the Bruins did, or maybe even the Panthers, to go back to see if they could seal the deal from last year losing to Vegas. But I'm sure they would want Toronto and the Rangers in a conference final. And I'm sure they would want to have Toronto get to a final, because that would mean everything for the NHL. But to me, the Rangers are front and center here in this postseason. That's number one. Number two, can I talk about the Maple Leafs? We talked about their drought. They finally got over the hump, winning a first-round series last year. They're going to play the Bruins here. Tough opponent. But I won't even go down that road just yet. Although hockey fans and people who follow the NHL, they're going to monitor what the Maple Leafs are going to do here. And maybe they are the second storyline here because of their drought and finally getting over the hump last year, winning a first round. And although they have a very tough opponent, but can they get deep into this playoff to where maybe they could be in a conference final and get that much closer to a Stanley Cup final? Now, they haven't won a Stanley Cup final since 1967. And they haven't played in a Stanley Cup final in forever. I believe dating back to that year. And the last time they got to a conference final was when they lost to the LA Kings in 93, when the Kings went on to lose to the Canadiens. So, not to say that there's pressure for them to get there. I'm sure in the city of Toronto, that is always going to be the case. But maybe they will have to be the team that we could look at to see as one that could control, I don't say control their own destiny, but one that's destined to finally get to a cup final. And maybe that's a little bit of a weak number two, but I'll get to a better one here. As far as my storylines, it is wide open. Any one of these teams, as we know, and we could say that year in, year out with the NHL, because it's not really predictable like the NBA, because the NBA, and I didn't really go through the teams that can win an NBA championship. We could probably pick five off the top of the head, whether it's Boston, Denver, maybe OKC. We could maybe even throw in the Phoenix Suns, or even the Clippers for that matter. But there are only a handful of teams that can win the NBA final, in my estimation. Stanley Cup, yeah, we know who the favorites are going to be. We think Vancouver with their big regular season. Dallas, who's had a very good year, or great year, as a one seed. And likely they're going to play the Kings. But it is a crapshoot. We've seen these teams go on runs. Look at last year. Florida is an eight seed going to a cup final, beating the Bruins and what they did in the regular season last year. So just because these teams have had monster regular seasons, even the Carolina Hurricanes for that matter, nipping on the Rangers' heels in the Metropolitan Division, or Winnipeg, who are going into this postseason on a strong run and a very stout winning streak, any one of these teams get picked off. In fact, you're going to have to play Colorado in all likelihood in the first round. So it is wide open. I would think you'd have as many as 8 or 9 teams that can win a Stanley Cup final. I mean, think about it. Bruins could get there. Panthers could get there. Rangers could get there. Carolina could get there. Dallas could get there. Colorado could get there. Vegas, I know they're the defending champ. Quite possibly them. Edmonton. And that's 8 or 9 right there. So to me, the NHL, maybe that could have been the number one storyline. To me, it was more the Rangers based on like everything I mentioned. But very fascinating. And that's the thing about the NHL, because teams that have had a lot of regular season success, it doesn't necessarily translate that they're going to be automatics to get to a conference final or even a Stanley Cup final. And we've seen that here over the years. Even last year, Colorado, they lost to Seattle in the opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And remember, Colorado came off of winning the Stanley Cup the year before. So, wide open as it is, and I probably should have put that as the first storyline, so my apologies. I guess I had Rangers on the brain. So I would think, wide open, Stanley Cup, Rangers, you want to throw in a little Maple Leafs. And I can't even say Vegas, because Vegas, they started off hot, and now they're just kind of getting to the finish line, and anything could go here. Maybe the switch will light up and they'll go ahead and maybe have a long Stanley Cup playoff run here. And maybe even the Panthers could do the same thing, although they have a very tough first round opponent and they have to get over that hump because the Lightning have beaten the Panthers to a pulp here. But I think it's going to be very compelling. We know that the Stanley Cup playoffs is always edge of your seat. Granted that it could be a little bit more physical for my liking, as we know, for those who listen to me. But I am ready. I am primed. And let me get to the matchups. And I can only do the East right now. I could speculate out West. But I know. What can I tell you? Now, in the East, the Rangers, they're going to go up against the Capitals. Can the Capitals get a game? I guess they can. But I can see the Rangers winning, I'll say in 5. I think they're going to sweep the Capitals. Although the Caps, they've had to work hard just to get to this point. They've scratched, clawed. They were at the bottom of the Metropolitan, and maybe as early as a month ago, they were maybe 6 or 7 points out, which I get it's not insurmountable, but it's not as if they were hovering around the wild card race over the last 6, 7 weeks of the season. Not the case. But I think the Rangers, they'll prevail. They have too much firepower. The Caps, not to say they're happy to be here, but I'm sure all that hard work. And again, we talked about it. If they're going to be in this series, win game one. They're going to have to do that. I don't care, because I think if they don't win game one, they're not winning game two. I'd be shocked if they win game two. So if you want to pick the Rangers off, pick them off now and maybe win a game three in your building to go up 2-1. And then maybe you have a shot to at least get to a 7th game. You'll guarantee 6 if they get to that, so we'll see. Islanders, Carolina, I've seen this movie before. We saw it last year. We'll have to see it again. Carolina, they're the type of team that is steady, if not spectacular. They have 4 lines that are going to come at you. They are a team that's going to come at waves. They're not blessed with superstar power. They don't have the one guy that you have to zero in on to kind of stop or slow down or whatever. No, but they just are a relentless team. They play very disciplined hockey. And the Islanders, I get it, they can play that defensive style. But it's almost as if these two teams mirror one another. And unfortunately, Carolina is better than the Islanders. Can the Islanders win 2 games in a series? Again, they're going to have to win game 1. And they lost a tough game 2 last year, if you recall, where They didn't get a penalty. And then the other way, they scored the goal. And I understand that the referees, they swallow their whistles when you get to overtime. But that was a tough break by the Islanders in a game two with they would have won that game. Who knows? But let's see if the Islanders can win at least two games. I think they can. But I think the Carolina Hurricanes are going to win in six. Tampa, Florida, this is a big hurdle for the Panthers because they got beaten by a pulp just recently over the last couple of years. Not last year, of course, but 3 years ago, they lost to them where they got swept. And then the year after that, which was 2 years ago, where they had the best record, President's Trophy, etc., and they lost in five games. So this is a time for them to show who's the better team in the state. I can see this going seven games. Is it tough to go against the Lightning, even with their recent pedigree? And I understand they lost last year in the first round to Tampa, to Toronto. But I'm going to say the Panthers are going to win this. I'm finally going to get over the hump. They're finally going to slay the beast. Maybe they win in six, but I'm going to say seven because I'm sure there's a lot of pride in that Tampa locker room. They have veteran leadership. Nikita Kucherov, who had a monster year, is probably going to be in the running for an MVP. And I think the Panthers will prevail, but in seven games. And then lastly, and again, this is your schedule. You have New York, Carolina, 5 o'clock TBS, followed by Toronto, Boston, which I'll get to. And then you have 12:30 Tampa at Florida, followed by Washington and the Rangers on ESPN at 3 o'clock. Toronto and Boston, this is going to be a long series. I think it's going to be seven games. And Toronto, you talk about wanting to slay a dragon. They have lost to the Bruins in the postseason in the past, especially that one series, I believe in 2011, where they had a 4-1 lead with about 11 minutes to go and they spit the bit. Not to say that that's going to be weighing on them, but the fans, and maybe some of the organization will remember that. Auston Matthews, he's going to have to really shine here. And we've seen what he's done the regular season, and he's had good postseasons, but he hasn't elevated his game. Same for Mitch Marner, for that matter. William Nylander, even John Tavares, for that matter. They have the scoring. Defense and goaltending, eh. Bruins, they always seem to find a way. I think the Bruins are going to win in seven. Although I could see Toronto winning, I could see them winning this series. But home ice, not that it matters a lot in the NHL, but I'm going to see I'll say the Bruins win in seven. And the West, I can't even give you right now because I don't know who the matchups are. I could speculate. I could tell you who I think will be matched up against one another. We would think Dallas and the Kings, but I think if the Kings win tonight, they could actually get the seventh seed and overtake Nashville. And who does Nashville play tonight? Nashville, they don't even play. They already played all their games, but I guess the Kings could actually get a shot to play the Canucks. And this is why it's weird. I can't even tell you. I will say this. Dallas looks formidable. They could be the team that could come out, but we all know it's very unpredictable. Colorado, I know they're going to have a chip on their shoulder after winning a cup 2 years ago and then losing in the first round last year. Winnipeg, I know a bit of a nondescript team, had a big final stretch of the season after losing six in a row previous to that. But is Winnipeg going to be long for this postseason or get out of the first round, especially if it is against Colorado? Edmonton, after that 2-10 start, they played well throughout the course of the year. Now it's go time for them. To me, they have to get to a conference final. They got to a conference final 2 years ago, as we know. And last year, they lost in the second round to Vegas, the eventual Stanley Cup champ. So, and think about it. They lost to the Stanley Cup champ the last 2 years. Colorado in a conference final and Vegas last year. So, to me, Edmonton. And you know what? I should have put them as a three. I did this freestyle off the top of my head, people. Edmonton, they didn't win a division. And yes, they had a very good last two-thirds of the year. I want to see Edmonton shine here. I want to see them get to a cup final. And will they? That's the big question. But who are they going to match up with? I don't know. I can't even tell you right at this very moment. I could say that they're going to go up against Vegas here, but who knows? So that we're going to have to wait and see. I think it's going to be Vegas, and that will be a very competitive first round. But I'll get into more of it on Monday, where we'll reconvene. The West, I would think, is going to start on Sunday. I don't think they're going to start on Monday. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll give them till Monday to start so they can have their own night. I don't know, but this is why I didn't like the schedule, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. So that's what we have with the NHL. And as far as the other sports are concerned, baseball, as I lace up my cleats again to the batter's box, sadly, you had a few deaths this week, and that's the highlight of the week because other than what's happening in the standings and what's going on in baseball, I know the Mets have played well. They won 10-13 after starting off 0-5. I'll get to them in a second. But you had Whitey Herzog pass away at the age of 92. He was a guy I could not stand. If you're a Met fan in the mid-80s, you couldn't stand Whitey Herzog. He hated the Mets. The White Rat had those great Kansas City Royal teams in the mid-70s go up against the Yankees those 3 years in 76, 77, 78. Wasn't part of that 80 team that beat the Yankees in the championship series. He was fired right before that season, and Jim Fry was the manager. But Herzog, Hall of Famer, then became a Cardinal manager, won in 82, went to a World Series in 85 and 87. Excellent manager, as we know. Passed away at the age of 92. Thoughts, prayers, condolences go out to he, Cardinal, Royal, and MLB. Very sad, but he lived to 92. Lived a long, good life. And obviously one of the top managers in the sport at that time. Then you also had Carl Erskine, the longtime Brooklyn Dodger, the last remaining Brooklyn Dodger. 97 years of age, pitcher. And what more can you say? When you're the last, well, was the last living Brooklyn Dodger. And again, you got to go back four generations. If your grandfather is still around and lived in this area, he could talk about those Brooklyn Dodger teams. And remember, that was 1957. So it's almost 70 years since they left. But for Erskine to be that last guy and sadly passed away at 97. And then you also had Ken Holtzman, who was part of that rotation of the Oakland A's in the mid-70s, who won those three championships, 72, 73, 74. And then later on pitched for the Cubs, died at the age of 78. So sadly, I had to bring up some passings there. And then some other news. I know I always get on the Yankees. So for the Yankee fan, I'm going to grant you this. John Sterling, the longtime voice, radio voice of the Yankees, also was an announcer for the Braves in the 80s, also did Islander games, New York Nets, yes, going way back. But we all know John Sterling with his crazy home run calls and for his pomp and circumstance in the booth with his Yankees win, the Yankees win, etc. He retired effective immediately, I believe, on Tuesday. And we'll be honored Saturday. I believe it was a health issue. I didn't really look into it. You would think that that's going to be the case. This is a guy who did all nine innings of Yankee games dating back to the late 80s. And for him to have to step down now, you know it must be something. I won't go as far as saying serious. But with travel and maybe it has to do with his voice. Who knows? Not that I've listened to him on the radio a lot. Who listens to ball games on the radio anymore? In this day and age of digital, in the digital world that we live in. But for Sterling, an excellent career. I'm sure he, if he's not in the Hall of Fame, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, you would think. Not my cup of tea, as we know, but I'll leave it at that. But he's going to have a great send-off there at the stadium, and he deserves it. So congratulations to him as the former Yankee radio play-by-play announcer. And like I mentioned, there's nothing really to unpack when it comes to what's happened. Yes, the Mets have won 10 out of 13. They've turned it around after that 0-5 start. Now, I get it. They beat the Royals and Pirates recently. And the Royals and Pirates going into this series, they've actually played well. So, yes, although Yankee fans or people could get at me to say, oh, you only beat the Royals and Pirates. And, yes, we did beat the Braves 2 out of 3 last week in Atlanta with one of the games being a washout. And then prior to that, we beat the Reds in Cincinnati. All right, big whoop. And I will say it, hand raised high in the air, admittedly, but they have won 10 out of 13, but now they're going to go into the deep end of the pool. After a day off today, they're playing the Dodgers. And all right, they're going to go to San Francisco to play the Giants after that. But the Dodgers this weekend, there's your litmus test, people. Let's see how the Mets do. You don't want to get embarrassed here. You want to win at least one game. If you win two, not to say that, oh, they're going to be a contender in the NL East or in the National League overall. But that will mean something, at least early on in the season. Especially after this recent stretch where they've gone 10-3. And they've won 4 series in a row. So let's see how they do in LA against the Dodgers. Let me check some pitching matchups just to see where they stack up against. And we know the Dodger pitching is in shambles right now. I believe Jose Quintana is going to start off this series. As I take a look here, schedule, as I pull this up, of course, internet is going slow. But opener tomorrow night, Chavez Ravine, Sean Manaea against Yoshinobu Yamamoto. So you know I'm going to be on top of that. Your Saturday matchup, which is an afternoon game, I believe, looking at it here, 4:05. Jose Buto, who's actually pitched pretty well against Gavin Stone. And then Sunday, your third game, 4:10, Adrian Hauser versus James Paxton. So I think, when did Quintana pitch? I thought he pitched, I guess it must have been Tuesday against the Pirates. So there you have it for the Mets and Dodgers. That could probably be your highlight series of the weekend, because other than that, Yankees are playing the Rays. All right, that's a series that will be on your radar. World Series rematch, although it's a far cry from it. Houston and Washington, as the Astros and Nationals will hook up. A lot of interleague play where you have the White Sox in Philadelphia. Boston's at Pittsburgh. The Angels are in Cincinnati. You also have Toronto at San Diego. Seattle at Colorado. So again, a lot of those matchups with AL versus NL. You do have Detroit at Minnesota, so maybe that's a series you're going to look at there in the AL Central. Other than that, that's all you have. Texas at Atlanta. I guess you have a team that is the defending World Series champs going up against the Braves. So maybe you want to take a look at that. But that's all you have with baseball, and that's what you have overall. The draft is next week. We'll talk more about that as we get closer. And that's what I got, people. Another episode just about in the books. Thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for carving out precious moments out of your day to listen to what it is to have to say about what goes on in the wonderful world of sports. If you haven't done so, like I mentioned at the top, please subscribe, rate, review on whichever podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, whatever it is, please. Let's spread the wealth. Also, my YouTube channel, at JReels, where I post daily. And obviously, this podcast goes up as well for the visually inclined. One more time, people. I'm a full-time content creator trying to make my way, trying to generate some income here. So leave a rating, throw me a few stars, a comment, etc. That's going to go a long way to increase the visibility of this podcast with those who aren't familiar with it. If you want to hit me up with a question, comment, suggestion, you can do so at the following. On Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the JReels Podcast. Twitter, X, JReels1, just a number. Or the old-fashioned way, the JReels Podcast at gmail.com. Hit me up. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals. Because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. It's in the blood. It's in the DNA, as I like to say. Talking sports from birth. From the time I came out of the womb. With nothing but passion, fire, energy, fury. With my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings. On anything and everything that happens. On the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul. From where I am to wherever you are. The JReels Podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx to South Beach to South Central to South Pacific and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the JReels Podcast, on the flip, baby.